Good evening, everyone. I understand the topic is very intense, and it takes its time, and we'd like to have a prompt starting. So we thank you all for coming. It's a very good turnout. And yes, there is still a little bit of room in the back. But we'd like to begin with asking you all to sing Psalter 383. And why don't we do all stanzas? It's a short Psalter. All that I am, I owe to Thee. Thy wisdom, Lord, hath fashioned me. I give my Maker thankful praise, whose wondrous works my soul amaze. One, two, and five. And we ask your attention for a portion of God's Word, the book of Leviticus, the 18th chapter. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, and say unto them, I am the Lord your God. After the doings of the land of Egypt, wherein ye dwelt, shall ye not do. And after the doings of the land of Canaan, whither I bring you, shall ye not do. Neither shall ye walk in their ordinances. Ye shall do my judgments and keep mine ordinances to walk therein. I am the Lord your God. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am the Lord. None of you shall approach to any that is near of kin to him to uncover their nakedness. I am the Lord. The nakedness of thy father or the nakedness of thy mother shalt thou not uncover. She is thy mother, thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife shalt thou not uncover, it is thy father's nakedness. The nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father, or daughter of thy mother, whether she be born at home or born abroad, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover. The nakedness of thy son's daughter, or of thy daughter's daughter, even their nakedness thou shalt not uncover, for theirs is thine own nakedness. The nakedness of thy father's wife's daughter, begotten of thy father, she is thy sister, thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's sister, she is thy father's near kinswoman. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy mother's sister, for she is thy mother's near kinswoman. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's brother. Thou shalt not approach to his wife, she is thine aunt. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy daughter-in-law, she is thy son's wife. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy brother's wife, it is thy brother's nakedness. Thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, neither shalt thou take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness, for they are her near kinswomen. It is wickedness. Neither shalt thou take a wife to her sister to vex her, to uncover her nakedness beside the other in her lifetime. Also thou shalt not approach unto a woman to uncover her nakedness as long as she is put apart for her uncleanness. Moreover, thou shalt not lie carnally with thy neighbor's wife to defile thyself with her. And thou shalt not let any of thy seed pass through the fire to Moloch, neither shalt thou profane the name of thy God. I am the Lord. Thou shalt not lie with mankind as with womankind. It is abomination. Neither shalt thou lie with any beast to defile thyself therewith. Neither shall any woman stand before a beast to lie down thereto. It is confusion. Defile not ye yourselves in any of these things, for in all these the nations are defiled which I cast out before you, and the land is defiled. Therefore I do visit the iniquity thereof upon it, and the land itself vomiteth out her inhabitants. Ye shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, and shall not commit any of these abominations, neither any of your own nation, nor any stranger that sojourneth among you. For all these abominations have the men of the land done, which were done before you, and the land is defiled. That the land spew not you out also when ye defile it, as it spewed out the nations that were before you. For whosoever shall commit any of these abominations, even the souls that commit them shall be cut off from among their people. Therefore shall ye keep mine ordinance, that ye commit not any one of these abominable customs, which were committed before you, and that ye defile not yourselves therein. I am the Lord your God. Let us try to ask for the Lord's help and blessing in this evening. Almighty and most holy Lord God, thou knowest of our gathering here together in this evening what the purpose thereof is. And Lord, we have begun reading a portion of thy holy word where thou didst so clearly forbid the very sins of which we hope to hear tonight, because those sins are also in the heart of all of us by nature, but it also comes out in families, it comes out in communities, in congregations. And then we ask thee, Lord, wilt thou help thy servant tonight when he, together with his wife, will present this topic? We ask thee, O Lord, wilt thou give what they stand in need of? And wilt thou grant that thy Spirit may accompany thy word, and that there may yet be arrows of conviction that also are brought home? Not one of us is without sin, but grant, Lord, that we may all be taught by thy Spirit to see sin for what it is, and that we may be made to seek thee, where alone forgiveness is to be found in the blood of the Lord Jesus Christ. And it is not without reason that he is called the most hidden person, that it, in the experience of thy people, that they seek, because thou hast made them seeking, but they do not find until it is thy time. Lord, wilt thou grant that it may not all testify against us what we hear from Sabbath to Sabbath, but also not what we hear tonight. Lord, may it be used in the midst of the community. May that work towards prevention, and where it has taken place, wilt thou give that healing that is so necessary in the hearts of and minds of those who have suffered abuse. But also, Lord, where there are those who have committed these things, that it may bring, they may be brought to repentance, and that in the end, thy name shall receive the honor and the glory. Lord, humble us with thy goodness in this evening. And again we ask thee, help thy servant and his wife. We ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. I was asked to announce that the topic is being recorded, that it will also be available on the church website, and that Mrs. Chris Heerschop is also looking after it, that it you can order from her, if you so desire, a copy for yourself or for friends or relatives who could not be here, so that that message may go beyond the audience that we have here tonight. And that there will be a refreshment break, as you obviously know, can see, after the topic, I've been told. If there is a short question break in between, that will not be the refreshment break, because then those breaks get too long. So a break after the topic. And also some of Reverend Verhunst's writings are available on the table there in limited quantity, but they're they can also be ordered. So with that, I would like to welcome Reverend Verhunts to come to the front to take over this evening and present his topic.
I will not spend too much time on introducing myself, and my dear wife here will share tonight the task that has been laid on our hearts for years already. In my pastoral experience, I have dealt probably more with sexual abuse and the aftermath of it than any other pastoral situation. And since it often involves girls or women, it is obviously much more proper in those counseling sessions to include a female, and that has become my wife, and she is in that sense to me indispensable in the ministry of dealing with those that have dealt with abuse. So she's going to take part of the topic tonight. We'll share it here and there. I'll step aside, and if I'm busy, then she's out there taking care of the PowerPoint. So thank you, Consistory of Lethbridge. Really appreciate it. You were willing to make this room available to carry the cost of this evening. Really acknowledge you for that. Thank you to Petra and Marianne, who have done all the nitty-gritty preparation for this evening. Thank you from your children for being here, and your grandchildren, even though they don't realize how important this is. The quote is rather shocking. But a man who deals in his professional work with sexual abuse predators in prisons in New Jersey, he writes in one of his books this astounding fact. He says, hundreds of convicted pedophiles have confided in me that the parents are our best allies. Now, you would never want to hear that, right? And which parent would want to be an ally to a predator who abuses children? Now, none of us would. But sometimes it is through ignorance or inaction that we become an ally. That's why this evening's topic. And I really so appreciate seeing you here, especially also so many young fathers and mothers together on this evening. Now, why do we have this topic? Oh, you already see the slide on you. Imagine standing by a river, Whitewater River, and you stand there with someone, and all of a sudden you see someone flowing by, struggling to not drown, and you jump in the river and you drag him out and you try to dry him off and warm him up, and as you're doing that, somebody else comes struggling through that same river and she's drowning. So again, you forsake the one and you jump in and you drag her out, and you just about are on the shore and you're drying her off, and all of a sudden there's a third one coming down the river. And this time, only one jumps in, and she sees her partner running upstream and says, hey, where are you going? She says, well, you know what? You help her. I'm going to find out how these people get in this river. Now, that's what we are doing here tonight. Now, we see too many people coming down this river of abuse. How can we stop this as communities with the Lord's blessing, obviously? So, why do we have this topic? There are four reasons. First, there is no family and there is no church exempt of this evil. The statistics are that one out of every four girls experiences negative sexual abuse in whatever form or shape. One out of four, that's 25% of our church, 25% of our catechism class, 25% of our schoolgirls. And that is a statistic that bears in the world true and in churches true. And sad to say, particularly in conservative churches, where you say that should never happen. One out of the six boys experienced sexual abuse. You see why we need to do this. This doesn't bypass our doors. The second reason, we as parents are the key in God's hand with God's blessing to prevent sexual abuse from happening. Friends, the best solution to this horror is prevention. And the best one to help your child to be armed is you as a parent. So thanks for being here. The third reason. Sexual abuse is so utterly devastating to the young girl, to the young boy. The reality is, friends, that this is a lifelong aftermath affecting future marriages, affecting trusting issues, affecting spiritual trust in God who allowed this. Oh, so many abuse victims have such major spiritual struggles thinking about God. Because often in our Christian circles, God gets infused in abuse. How? Father, he's a Christian, prays before he plays. And the confusion of what these minds are facing, as well as all the emotional lifelong. We want to stop this. The fourth reason. Now, that has not much to do with the abuse in itself, but in the day in which we live, there is also so much what we call sexual harming on the rise among teenagers and young adults. It's alarming how many of our reformed children are sleeping together before marriage. You do not want to know the figures. I just saw again the figures in the Netherlands among our reformed, gereformeerde gezinten. You say, really? Really? Is this are the children in our reformed schools where more than half of them say they sleep together? And why? Oh, it's no big deal. It's just a hookup for a night. No obligations. That's a lie. And because this whole sexual explosion seen among our younger generations has a lot to do with the fact that we don't prepare our children well enough to stand against this cultural inundation of sexual things. So those are the four reasons why we are here tonight. And let's then go to the next slide. And what is now sexual abuse? Elder Krishnik read to us the chapter that really very, very clearly and vividly sets it out. But let's read this definition. Sexual abuse is the exploitation or the use of a child or a teen for meeting the sexual needs or desires of another adult, teen or child. It includes both sexual contact and sexual interactions in form of visual and verbal and psychological or relational abuse. The Bible calls this sin. The Bible calls this in a nice phrase that we read tonight, uncover the nakedness of brother, sister, son, daughter. Now that uncovering the nakedness simply means having no sexual relationships with any of these family members that are not your spouse. It's in the Bible. Now when's the last time you, mom and dad, read Leviticus 18 at the table and didn't wish the kids weren't listening very good, no questions? Wrong. That chapter was meant to be explicitly read and explicitly expounded by moms and dads to tell children, look, this is sin in God's eyes. You don't touch your brother's body, certainly not in his private parts. And you don't uncover your sister's nakedness, ever, to look at her and to explore what that looks like or what girls look like. Now, when is the last time that I was talked to like that when I grew up? Never. my great father and mother totally never opened up that chapter to me as Leviticus 18 did. So, we need to call sin, sin. And God does so. Obviously, what God is specific about in the Bible, we need to be as specific about, especially in our families. And no, our children should not get their sexual education at a school classroom. That's a totally artificial situation. And we as teachers know, been there, that is so difficult. Especially because these kids are teens and they're feeding each other. That's a family task. Oh, you're going to hear me say that a lot this night. Let's look at the next slide. There are two forms of sexual abuse, and most of us only think about the physical sexual abuse. That's obviously the touching and the stroking and the fondling, all to arouse the child, the teen, the minor. And incredibly damaging. Why is that? Well, you all are old enough here to know that touch and sight stimulates the biology of the body. That's how God created us. And so a child that's abused in some way experiences pleasure, as strange as it sounds, horrible as it sounds, because at the same time there's horror, there's pain, there's confusion, and yet there's also pleasure. And this is an immense confusion for an abuse victim, causing her guilt, I caused it, I did it, and the damage, my friends, is so devastating to these children. Yeah? So that is what physical contact is. But our next slide shows us there's also non-physical sexual abuse. And you see on your outline, you go to the next slide, please, the details of that. And I will not comment on it, but you see yourself the visual. That's, of course, number one, pornography. Pornography. Is that in our churches? You don't want to know how many people I deal with who are dealing with pornography and dabbling with it or falling into it or struggling with it. And to find a pornography magazine as a child in the basement of your own house is sexual abuse. That's visual. A child is not ready for that. Nobody's ready for that. Yeah? That's visual. Also, a child or an adult in a state of undress, as fathers and mothers, which we just read, thou shalt not uncover your mother's nakedness. Well, moms don't uncover their nakedness then either before the child or dads do. So let's keep this private and proper. There ought to be a shame factor that needs to remind our children. This is something sacred. This is something special. Now, that's visual. Then the next one is the verbal, inappropriate jokes, seductive suggestions. Sexting is using your cell phone to send messages that are highly sexually suggestive. Invitations to be alone with an abuser is already an example of verbal sexual abuse. And then the last one is the hardest one. And we think, well, that's maybe not quite so damaging. It's a psychological one. And you notice there's three examples of that I will not now go into because of time's sake. But one thing you need to look at these three. We think, well, that's not so bad, the visual or the verbal. When dad is making all kinds of derogatory comments about the body of his daughter that is developing. Is that damaging? Come on. It is. It's hugely damaging to an insecure teenager whose body or her body is developing, and dad's making all these inappropriate comments. Yeah, that's just as damaging as sometimes the very minimal physical is. Okay, that then leads me to the next section. And really, the heart of the subject tonight, I just wanted to set for a moment what sexual abuse is. Now, the purpose for tonight is that we together like to present to you some thoughts about how do I now prepare my child to be strong against this abuse. Yeah, that's the point. So let's look. There's a couple points in our topic. The obvious part is that we need to pray about this. Our children, we can't protect them. This is an evil world. Evil lives in their heart. Evil lives in dad's heart, in mom's heart, in siblings' heart. It's everywhere. As Mr. Griesling just said in his prayer, this lives in our own heart. And that means it lives in our own house. And in our own church. And in our own school. And in our own youth groups. It's all there. On every level of those settings. So prayer. Secondly, work. Except the Lord built the house, the workman worketh in vain. Yeah, that's God's necessary blessing, but we still have to work. And that is our task as parents. So, we're looking at four parts tonight in this work, how to build this castle. The first thing is that we're going to look at some education for you. Yeah, as parents, let's educate ourselves on sexual abuse. Secondly, structure of the castle. Your marriage life and family life, critical. I will not have much time tonight to say much on that at all, but the critical component of preventing sexual abuse is that we have strong families and marriage life in a biblical way. Yeah, I'll show you why that is. Thirdly, then we look at the children. How do we protect or defend or arm our children so that are the walls? And lastly, we are to look at the gates, and that also will be minimal. You've had some wonderful publications here the other day about the internet and so on, and I think you also had some presentations on that, so we'll be very minimal on that as well. Our main focus tonight is the first one and the third one. But all four components are important. We're going to change. Michelle, it's your turn. This is kind of wonderful. Take a break.
Except that I'm not used to public speaking.
I'm not used to this. I might be a little bit behind you.
That's fine. So, beginning with us, as adults, as parents, grandparents, or people involved with children, such as teachers or office bearers, etc., when you play a role in a child's life. So as parents or others involved with children, we need to learn the facts about where the dangers are for the children. If you know what you're looking for, it's better than if you don't, because you may overlook dangerous situations or people. So from whom or where do you think your children have the greatest risk? When you call to mind what an abuser may look like, what do you think of? Well, children will almost always tell you that they think about a scary-looking man or a creepy-looking man, somebody who's maybe unkempt or, poor or whatever. They can describe things that they think that they can recognize an abuser from the way he looks. However, this is not true at all. We cannot recognize abusers from the way they look or from outward appearance. They can be rich, they can be poor, they can be educated, not well educated. Every religion, every type of job, married and unmarried, abusive people come from all walks of life. So we cannot find the profile from that. So who then are we to be cautious about? Fact two is that most kids know and trust the person who abuses them. 93% of the children know the person who has abused them. Only 7% are molested by a stranger. Often we talk about stranger danger. Hopefully you all prepare your kids about that. Watch out for strangers. Never go with strangers. If someone offers you candy, don't take candy. All those things, 7%. 93% of the victims know their abuser. So what Leviticus 18 writes about, what the Lord says in Leviticus 18 is true. He doesn't even mention the stranger in Leviticus 18. It's all about family relationships. And in our experience, in particular, older siblings. So most abusers are family members. Older siblings, as we said, we have have heard the stories of many, many people who have been victimized in their childhood by an older brother or sister. Sometimes these older siblings have been abused themselves, and so the pattern goes on. The second largest group of abusers are also families, uncles, aunts, teachers, coaches, pastors, elders, people involved with children, and they use their position of trust to gain access to children. They develop relationships with the children. We'll go into that shortly. Some of the red flags to be alert to is when an adult resists taking other adults along on trips or events, reassuring, you know, it's fine, I can handle it, or seeks time alone with a child. This is a dangerous situation. Can't recognize the person as being, you can't recognize the situation from the person, but this red flag. Or the adult is vague about what plans they have to do with the children. Overeager to take care of the child, or over-enthusiastic about the child's gifts. So that's a red flag to watch out for. There's some sort of caring relationship with the child in these types of abuse. So therefore, never trust another adult just on basis of family. It's better to be safe than sorry. Now, on the grooming of the children, the process of grooming can be very short, such as online predators. They can establish a contact and make a request or hit within an hour or less. It can be very short. Or it can be long, years of a careful setup where someone grooms a child for abuse. Pedophiles have patience. So they start with identifying and targeting the victim. Later we'll talk about traits that abusers look for in children. But this is a very important step. They will look for a vulnerable child. Second, they will gain trust and access to the child. Will act in a way with safe behaviors, gaining the trust of both the parents and the child. Everything is normal and fine. And then this person gets access to the child because you trust him. They play a role in the child's life with a legitimate activity. Restoring an old tractor, babysitting after school, or come feed the animals with me. Something that's legitimate. And then they isolate the child. They do it purposely to get the child by him or herself, or just you and me. Then they create secrecy around the relationship. Special, just for you and me. Don't tell. Sometimes they do it by introducing something that's a little bit forbidden. Like in our family, we don't drink a lot of soda or a lot of candy, but maybe a treat like that. Oh, don't tell your mom because I know she won't like it if you're drinking soda, but that's just your and my secret. Not a huge deal, right? We're not crossing a major boundary there. But the groomer is looking. Is the child going to tell mom, I did have some soda at so-and-so's house? They're just checking. Okay, is she or he going to keep a secret? After they have established, okay, this child's not telling mom about this slightly wrong thing, they go in for the big move. They establish or initiate sexual contact. And again, maybe very gradually, maybe first appropriate, less appropriate, gauging. Are they going to tell on me? How is this child going to take this? This is very critical how the child reacts to this at this point. But mostly, by the time this happens, if there's been a really careful setup, the grooming that takes place, by that time, the person, the abuser, has control of the relationship. It's too far gone. The child's enmeshed in this relationship with this person who probably has given them a lot of special things or has brainwashed them. The child maybe feels trapped. Maybe they feel that they need the abuser because he is loving and kind and they need that attention and affection. They also may probably be, by that time that sexual abuse has actually happened, they are probably also controlled by threats or bribery. If you tell, they can threaten to do something bad, or they might bribe. You know, if you tell, you won't be able to come with me anymore doing this or that. So they secure the abusive relationship through that, through control. Now, some of the tricks that predators commonly use, there are a lot of them. We got this from an expert on it, and we have shared these with you, but I'm not going to read through them all for time's sake. I just want to call attention to a couple of them, and number one is very important. Special attention. That is probably a primary way that abusers get a hold of children, is through establishing a caring relationship in which the child gets attention and affection or anything else that the abuser has identified as a need in that child's life. And they are very clever about identifying those needs. Number three, the assistance lure. Oh, let me back up. So the list that was given in this resource I thought was very disorganized. Some of these are warning against tricks that strangers use, and some of them are tricks that family members or acquaintances would use. This assistance lure is one of the stranger ones. Will you please show me where something is, etc. Asking a child for help. That's something you need to drill in your kids. Safe adults don't ask kids for help. Bottom line. If an adult asks you to help them with something, you can walk away. This is a stranger, right? So, again, you are calling attention to a safe or an unsafe situation rather than an unsafe person. And number four, the authority trick we've already mentioned. That is also a common way that abusers get a hold of children. Next slide. I just put those up there. I don't really want to call attention or read them all out. They are on a handout, number three. This, I don't know if you didn't refer to that yet. On our website, we have an extensive resource for you for reading back on a lot of this information and actually getting more information that we don't have time to cover tonight. So you can find those tricks on the handout number three, and I believe it's in your booklets there too. So check on our website for more information on that. Okay, next slide. I think none of those need any special point there except for number 18. No, I got a wrong number. I don't know which one I was going to point out there, but those are all fairly obvious things that you probably are aware of as well. Okay, I think it's time to hand it over.
Well, Michelle already spoke about the handouts book. This gaining of trust. Give you one practical example. You probably like examples, right? This young boy lost his father, died. Uncle, elder of the church, says, you know what? It'd be nice if he has a little father time with me. I'll take him along. And this young boy gets acquainted with his uncle, who's an elder in the church. Nobody suspects anything. He's helping, he's giving him a bit of father-son time because his father just died. Terribly abused. For years. Yeah, that's what I meant with gaining trust and access. You know, the mother is glad to see this uncle give some attention to the boy who has lost his father. Yeah, this is the mean tricks that these people use. Now, let's move on. This is the parents' education. We look at some of the facts, right? By the way, there's a proverb somewhere, and I can't quote it. Solomon says, he who goes out to hunt and he shoots something and he lets it rot, that's foolishness. Don't quote me on the exact words here. I can't just recall it. So that applies to tonight. You've come out here to hunt, right? Tremendous amount of information. Are we trying to make you drink from a fire hydrant?
That's how much we're getting. So tonight, you're not done. You are going to take this home with you and rehearse it with your spouse together and then with your children. Like all these tricks that we just saw. These also be discussed with your children over the course of time. Yeah? To make them aware of what tricks are being used. Otherwise, it's useless. So please take your parents' education about some of these facts and move it into the next stage. Next on. Education is about how to recognize what abuse is. Yeah, what we did in the previous slides is proactive. Now let's look at some reactive parenting. What do you do when your child comes forward? Now, I am not going to speak on this first one. Learn how to recognize sexual abuse. In the booklet that you can download, there are 3 pages of all kinds of information about what might indicate that something wrong with your child. What might be there? And why is that important? Because of this second fact. Most children won't tell that they are being abused. Rare for children to talk about this. They may throw out a hint to see if it's safe. And depending on how you react, they either will shut down or talk more. How many people we have not heard say, I tried to tell this to my mom, and she didn't want to hear of it. What dad was doing. Well, maybe mom doesn't want to hear what dad is doing. I understand that. But the child asked. So please, realize kids rarely come forward to talk about this. When your child says, I don't want to go to Uncle David. Oh, I don't want to stay over at his house. Well, why not? I just don't want to. Well, don't say, child, that is disrespectful. They like you to come. If your child says that, that's a red flag. There might be something going on at Uncle David's house. And for us to force it through, your child loses a big ally. Remember that statement? Pedophile loves his best allies, parents who fail to do what they need to do. Our little girl, grandchild Camille, was real brave. She was in New Zealand school with a whole row of daffodils along the fence. And the kid is in kindergarten. So she said, I'm going to pick some daffodils for the teacher. So she has a whole handful of daffodils. Well, one of these big senior kids comes barging up at her. Says, what did you do? Those you're not allowed to do. And now you're allowed to pick. Oh, that kid just shriveled up. And she comes home and Sarah said, what's wrong with you, Camille? Nothing. Well, she could see on the kid. And the body language, the way, something is terrible wrong. There's a trauma happened. What happened? Nothing. She put the child to bed and she could feel the kid was like a plank. What's wrong, Camille? Would not tell. Finally, the next day, she told the story. Now, this is only picking some daffodils. Right? Your children won't tell. So, please be prepared. Then, what do you do when... Oh, why do kids don't tell? Oops, I lost my piece of paper. Here we go. Fear, number one. Already said that. Not to believe. Number two, blame themselves. They think they're guilty. They think I caused this. Why? I was bad. I was naughty. And now daddy did this. Or my older brother. Or as I already said earlier, I'm part to be blamed because I did experience some pleasurable feelings. Even though it wasn't right. Number three, they won't tell because they're powerless. That's one of the traits abusers look at. A lot of kids are powerless kids. And we'll come back to that in a moment when we deal with the family structure. Number four is denial because it's so shameful and so painful. And one way to deal with pain and shame is to pretend it never happens. It's amazing what children can bury in their mind of what horrible things are happening. And they survive by developing another personality. You could have a valedictorian on your universe, on your high school graduation. Successful! Abused terribly for years. You say, they don't fit together. They deny. They hide. So shameful. We pretend it never happened, and somehow they survive it. Not really. Number five is family loyalty. What would happen to my family if I disclosed that grandpa did this? That dad or brother has done this? The next one is confusion. So look at the handout again, friends, and there's more reasons there in more detail. So that is parent education. The statement on the bottom I already said. So let's go to the next slide. What is the third level of education? We look at recognizing sexual abuse, be alert. What's the next level? I need the next slide. Be prepared how to respond. You do not want to know, of course, that all of a sudden your child walks up to you and says, you know, Mommy, Grandpa pulled my pants down yesterday and touched me on my bottom. How are you going to respond to that? No, you didn't do that. He didn't do that. Angry? You're angry, obviously. At who? Oh, Grandpa, I hope. Yeah, but what if Grandpa didn't do it and the child comes up a story? Friends, if children come up a story like that, believe them. Immediately. At first. Yeah? That's why I say the second one, believe the children, because typically children don't tell stories like that. It's just shameful. It's hurtful. It's yucky. No, they don't want to tell. So believe the child. And thirdly, reassure the child that they are safe. Oh, I am wrong. This is your portion. All right. We are crossing lines here. So, reassure about safety. Immediately tell the child, I'm glad you told me. Don't worry. Why? Why didn't you say that? What's the abuser saying in their other ear? You watch it. You tell about this to your mother. You tell about this and you'll be in trouble. I'll find you. Oh, the threats that these abuse victims have to go through. So they need to hear, I'm here for you. I'll protect you. Don't worry what you said to me. I will watch over you. So number four is also very important, is that you encourage them to talk for facts. Don't ask about feelings. Don't ask how do you feel about it. No, that's not what you need. You need to ask factual questions. Open-ended. What do you mean he pulled down your pants? Where did he did that? Where did he do that? When did it happen? How often has it happened? Calm, please. Not alerted. Calm. Let the child feel you're calm, you're controlled, even though your heart is torn out of you as he is telling these things. Yeah? Don't put thoughts in their minds. But ask them factual questions. And record them and just reassure the child. And don't suggest, did he do this and did he do that? No. That's not what you need to do because now you're confused, the little mind. Yeah? Don't ask anything. It's what, how, where, when. The questions that the detective is supposed to ask. But detectives often frame the victim by asking other questions. And that's not what you want to do with a child especially. Well, see other hints on your outline. But sorry, this was not my portion. So,
going.
Oh,
no. Back to you.
It isn't.
It is, really.
Oh. You notice we don't do this very often together. Okay, then the next slide. One statement on that. Most predators have gone digital.
When your child is on the computer, there's other people watching her or him. And there's a device called typo squatting. They actually look at the typing errors that the child is writing, and they can figure out this is a child. And they'll start sending messages. If you're not watching it, your child could start communicating with people that are predators. And most predators today are digital, online. I'm surprised how many fathers and mothers allow children to talk in chat rooms. Or in a computer game, sometimes there are some messages back and forth between the developer and children and parents. Dreadful, dangerous, our territory. This digital world is the devil's realm. Okay, let's go to the next slide. Let's repeat again. We've looked at educating yourself. We've looked at the second one, and that is very brief. That's no time for me to speak on tonight. But a healthy biblical family is one of the most natural defenses to protect your child from sexual abuse. Abusers target dysfunctional families. They search for children that show in their behavior that they are lacking at home love, care, and so on. So, obviously, abuse can happen in the best families. We've seen some really beautiful families where abuse took place. We're very open about sexual things in our family life as we grew up, but even one of our children was exposed to a classmate that wanted to do sexual things with her. So it can happen in the best family. No one is here obviously exempt, but be aware of it, that if you are having marriage and family difficulties, and that's why the topic tomorrow night follows up on this, you are really setting up your child for a more dangerous vulnerability. And why is that? Let's look at that for a moment. Maybe wait a moment. I confused myself. Go on to the next slide. Sorry. So look at that last statement. Build up your vital elements of a functional family life. You go on to the next slide, Michelle, just for time's sake. This last statement is the best. No, sorry. One more back. This last statement is biblical counseling for marriage and family is the best gift your protection can give. You know, if you as husband and wife don't have a close, intimate, good, let me just be plain, sexual life, that's explosive. Yeah? If there is tensions in the family structure between husband and wife, and if there is dysfunctionality between the parents and the children, your children are starving for emotional love and become victims because they're vulnerable. So that's why I say that structure of your family life, we need to, as pastors and elders and teachers, spend so much more time building on the unit of the family. And please, do all you can to strengthen yourself in that regard. Now, let's finalize this structure just to look at the parents' education. Just let's learn the facts. We've looked at how to identify. We have learned how to respond. Invest in your marriage and your family life. It's a good time for us to take a short break. You get 5 minutes to stand up and talk to your neighbor.
Shankar. Now, no one of you knows what Shankar means, but that means in Chinese, speed up. Well, that means sit down, let's get going.
All right, this is the part of the topic that, especially as a mother, I think, I most wanted to share with you. It is the education of the children, and I think it is a vital part and one that my husband and I have used in our own family. We have developed a three-pronged approach to prevention. And we're going to split this into three categories of ages. The first one is the infants, toddlers, and preschoolers. The second category, or the second section, will be the school kids. And the third one will be tweens, which are 10, 11, 12-year-olds and teenagers. And the three-pronged approach that we have, thank you, is teaching and developing healthy boundaries in children. The second prong is teaching body awareness and sex education in a biblical framework. And the third prong is using safety strategies. We need this comprehensive thing because there are different types of abusers and there's different circumstances in which abuse happens. So we need all three of these. I will try to be brief. I know you've gotten a ton of information already, but I feel this is the nuts and bolts of actually preparing the children. And so that's why we've called this in our picture of the castle. This is the castle walls. This is what's keeping the abuse out, hopefully. So, starting with babies, toddlers, and preschoolers. A lot of people say, why is that necessary? Are babies abused? And the sad reality is, yes, babies and toddlers are abused. In the last 2 weeks, I have spoken with two people or heard of the story of two people who were abused or knew of a baby being abused. So, yes, this happens. According to the U.S. Justice Department, 1 in 7 victims is under the age of 6. 1 in 7. This includes adults. That's staggering. And of all sexual assaults in the United States, 1/3 are against victims under 12. That's including adult victims. So this is huge. Yes, we need to be prepared as parents to keep our young children safe. Okay, so most abuse starts with violation of a boundary. If you forget everything else tonight, this is the one thing I want you to take home and not forget. This is absolutely crucial. That sexual abuse begins with a boundary violation. Therefore, your children need to know what boundaries are. They need to know how healthy boundaries function in their life. That starts with babies. So this kind of overlaps with tomorrow night's topic. My husband has done a great job researching about boundary development, and that also works with tomorrow night's topic, but this one too. Babies are already learning about themselves and about adults and other people around them from their very first day. So the first stage of boundary building would be building that security. There is somebody out there who hears me when I cry, and if I cry, something will happen. I'll be taken care of. So, yes, it starts with infants. But a boundary, then, is a limit around a person. It applies to bodies, obviously, and that's what the babies learn as they start to wake up. You know, when they're first born, they hardly know anything except for that they're hungry, they want to be fed, and that they want to have clean clothes on them. But it doesn't take very long and they start waking up and seeing people around them, starting to interact with them. They begin to learn, I am a person and my mother is another person and I am not one with my mother. That's what they think, I guess, when they're babies. So there is a growing process of learning who they are as a person. And as they start to become mobile, they find out, oh, I'm not so limited to this space. I can actually explore the area around me. So boundaries apply to bodies, to physical space around a person. Boundaries apply to feelings that a person has, to opinions, possessions, and so on. So there's a lot going on in those early years about teaching children to respect other people's possessions. Don't touch brother's toys, don't touch mommy's plants, and so on. Respect the feelings of others. People can get hurt by what you do. I think I was going to share an example here. Once I was visiting with a friend, and I was in the chair, and she wanted to come talk with me, so she came and sat on the floor next to me, and her 15-month-old thought, hey, this is great, Mom's on the floor. And so he came over, and he wanted to very affectionately give her a big kiss. Well, he ended up biting her. So she's like, oh, you know, it gave her a bit of a surprise, but I thought she handled the situation perfectly as far as boundaries go. She took the little boy, and she said, no, Ronan, no biting. And then she says, be gentle, be gentle. And she rubbed him on his cheek, be gentle. She's trying to teach him what gentleness is. She says, you hurt Mommy. Mommy got an owie. You know, I thought, wow, right there she just conveyed a whole lot of things. No, what the word no means. Can't do that to somebody else. That hurts. It has a reaction on, or it has an effect on me. Teaching the child to, you know, notice that his or her actions have a consequence. So a lot of boundary building going on in toddlers and children. Also, as you know, terrible twos. Kids exert that independence. They want to do their own thing. They will start using the word no on you all the time. And that is actually healthy for them to be learning. When can I use the word no? What effect does it have? It's very important not to stifle that either. Of course, it needs to also be disciplined and controlled, especially when it comes to the commandments of the Lord or the rules of the house. When the kid goes to touch the plant on the coffee table and Mom says no, no is no. And they need to learn that and obey that without fuss or delay. So, boundary building is essential for babies and toddlers. The second aspect, I'll be quicker on the next two, teaching toddlers and preschoolers about their bodies is also essential, and please start early. Teaching them what does safe and unsafe mean. What does it feel like to be safe? What does it feel like to be unsafe? At the end of our booklet, I think your handout, or else it's on the resource on the internet, there are some books, and there's actually books written even about that you can read to your young kids to discuss that and teach that. What is a good touch and a bad touch? Touch that makes you feel uncomfortable. So there are appropriate touches. We all need affection. Your children need affection. We don't want to have affectionless houses, but we also want appropriate touching. And you need to teach that to them since very young, 1 year old and on. Please teach what is appropriate and repeat often to them. No one is allowed to look at or touch their nakedness or their private parts or whatever. Bath time is a great time to teach that. I also use the opportunity to teach about that by trying to get my young kids to wash themselves on their private parts as early as possible. And just remind them, that's for you. As soon as they're able to do that hygienically, of course. But remind them, you are not allowed to let anyone touch you unless there's things, you know, Mommy has to help with or whatever. Use correct vocabulary. Don't call them secret parts. Private parts is okay. Don't use baby talk or code words for the anatomy. Teach them correct vocabulary from the very beginning, so that they also have the ability to tell you if something has happened. They've got the vocabulary. Also, modesty in the home. Just a quick note on this. Families have different levels of tolerance for nakedness. A lot of times people let toddlers run around naked. We did not let that happen. If it's not appropriate when they're four, it's not appropriate when they're two or one either. So it isn't cute. It's putting your child at risk. To balance that out, too much secrecy is also not good. I think just an open, healthy discussion about things while keeping them safe and modest is the balance there. Okay, safety. That's real quick. You know that from 1 to 5, the safety of your children is up to you. If it's up to them, you know what they get into. Up high, down low, into stuff that's poisonous, you name it. Kids will get into it all, and that goes for all aspects, also sexuality. you need to keep them safe. Supervision at all times, and also that you use trustworthy supervisors when you can't be there. Okay, the second section. And I'm sorry, I know this is fast, but we have to get through this, and I really want to share the three-pronged approach with you. So again, in the next age category, boundaries, sex education, and safety strategies in school kids, a new world opens up to your kids when they go to school. Kind of sad moment, isn't it? Kids go off to school. Every mother's like, oh, that went fast. And how will they do? And we're sad to see them go. These are our two youngest kids on their first days of school. And as you can see, the daughter is wary of it, and the son can't wait to go. It's quite funny to see the difference there. But preparation is needed before these kids go out the door. You need, before school starts and before they spend many hours away from you, to give them some education and preparation. Okay, boundaries and obedience to authority should be well established by the time they're five. Right? That if all is going well in your home, mom and dad says something, kids obey, they've got that all hopefully fairly well established, and consequences if they don't. However, when they go to school, they need to know that sometimes that boundary is not so clear. What happens if teacher or janitor or big kid or little kid tells them to do something that is wrong? Can they disobey? Many kids will not. If the teacher tells them to do something, they'll do it. If the teacher does something that he or she shouldn't, they won't say anything. They will not open their mouth and talk back or correct or come against an adult. So we need to tell them, yes, you need to obey. God says in the fifth commandment, honor your father and mother, and that includes teachers and so on, but that's within God's law. They have to be obedient to the Lord, and if they're not, then you must not obey them. We obey the Lord before those in authority. And often that commandment even is used against kids. They are told that they have to obey authority so that, you know, they open themselves up for abuse. So that's one thing to prepare the kids. Second aspect is from kid to kid. Talk about these things before they go to school. What happens if the kid wants to do something that's wrong? What are you going to do? What should you do? And go through different situations with the kids. Also, we have talked about sexual abuse, what it is to our kids from a young age, and told them, if something happens, you need to tell mom or dad. Again, like he said, our own daughter was asked on the playground to do some things. She did not come and tell us, even though we have repeated this and repeated this so many times. You need to be aware of that. They rarely come forward, even with very good education. So she did tell us later, but it wasn't on the day of. Would have liked it to be on the day of. Okay, so that's about school. Now, boundaries at home and family life, I'll be brief on that. More on this, what you have begun to develop already. Respect each other. Brothers and sisters, respect each other's feelings. You may not say unkind things. God wants you to say kind things to one another. You may not call names. You respect each other's possessions. You respect each other's bodies. Don't allow hitting, the whole works, all of it, kicking, biting, etc., etc. Don't allow it. There's a no-tolerance level for disrespecting someone's personal boundaries by any kind of physical violence, and I think we should really have a zero tolerance on that. Play fighting is one thing when boys especially, sometimes our girls do too, like to wrestle, and so on, but it really has to be, you have to know it's good-natured and not at all one kid exerting control over another. Children who are treated with love and respect at home should not fear authority figures. compliant children are at-risk children. I'll repeat that. Compliant children are at-risk children. So if it is not necessary to keep children in line at home by fear, we don't need to rule the children and keep them in line with fear. The Bible says train up a child in the way he should go. Train, educate, lovingly teach, motivate in a positive way. We tell them as simple as this, obedience equals happiness. And use the teachable moments. Look how happy we feel here because of, you know, the way you have done your chores or whatever. Or when something goes wrong, there's been a fight or disrespectfulness or whatever. You feel happy? No. Disobedience, disrespect equals unhappiness. So these are some of the boundaries that school-aged children are really working out. Healthy families allow their children to express their feelings with appropriate self-control. Another big issue you're working on with your school-aged child. They should not be forbidden or stifled to cry or even be angry, but they have to learn how to express it in appropriate ways. Also, kids' opinions and so on should not be rejected or ridiculed. There's a lot of bullying even that goes on in families between siblings or from parents to children, and this is not healthy for them. Okay, and then sex education and body awareness in the school-age kids. Again, please begin early. We wait way too late to start education of sexuality, if we begin at all. And I think it's better now than it was in the past. Probably most of us sitting in this audience here would share our experience that our parents didn't really, if at all, discuss sexuality with us. And I think that it's better amongst some of the younger generation, but still, please begin early. There are great books out there to help you with this. That you read a book about a child's body, about what sexuality is, God's gift of sexuality, some really great biblical resources out there to read along with them and discuss. Your kids will appreciate it that you open up the subject. They will hear about it. Don't you think that you will just protect them from knowing these things? No way. It's out there at school, also our Christian school, probably in a lot worse language and a lot cruder or disrespectful. It's not honorable how it's talked about at school in general. So be first. Be before the kids and teach sexuality as God's gift and teach them from a very young age. He forbids sexual behavior outside of marriage for our good. Kids need to hear it just like that. Don't shy away from talking about sexuality with them. You'll be more embarrassed than they will. Again, I think I referred to this earlier. Your highest risk category for sexual abuse for children is actually the age of 8 to 12. Okay? So keep the subject open. And lastly, safety consciousness for school kids. Okay, we mentioned stranger danger. Hopefully you have taught your kids or will teach your kids that. Hammer on using a buddy system. Never go anywhere alone. If you're going to go use the bathroom at the park, take a friend with you. If you're using the bathroom anywhere, actually, even at school, I think that it's good to train your kids to not go alone anywhere. But in teaching about stranger danger, you still need to emphasize the far greater danger is from somebody that they know. Don't exclusively leave it to stranger danger. Teach them how to recognize a potentially dangerous situation. Not a dangerous person. They won't recognize a dangerous person, a dangerous situation. And I'll just repeat them briefly for you. Being alone is a dangerous situation, especially if an adult asks you or seeks out a place where he or she can be alone with you. It's a red flag. When a person comes into your personal space, you can tell your kids that just directly. If you're standing there and somebody keeps on stepping towards you and you step back and they step into your space and so on, you need to take action at some point that you feel, you know what, I'm not feeling safe or comfortable with this person. They're in my space. Then tell them, do something about it. Go find an adult right there and then. I lost my place here on my beautiful list. Here we go. Uncomfortable touching. As I said, in the process of grooming, a lot of times abusers will start with an appropriate touch, a touch on the shoulder, a rub on the back, or pat on the head, or whatever. Those are all okay, but when a child feels uncomfortable with whatever touching it is, they have a right to say no. Teach them they have a right to say no if someone's touching them. Under no circumstances do they have to let someone touch them. And they should trust their feelings. Tell them, trust your feelings. If you don't feel safe, you don't like it, say no. Walk away, tell an adult. Don't put up with it. Tell them, again, I mentioned that if an adult asks you for help, a stranger asks you for help, big red flag. If they're being followed, teach them. Be aware. If you're walking home from somewhere or you're driving in your car and you notice, be aware of what's going on around you. Public bathrooms, we had this issue. My son is, he's 12 now, so it's okay, but I would often travel to Michigan and my husband would be somewhere else, and so I took the kids to Michigan sometimes. We stop at a rest area. My son has got to go in the bathroom by himself. Well, for a while, I used the family bathroom. That is an option, too. But then it just got to be he's old enough. He's got to go use that bathroom. So then you tell them, okay, what are you going to look for in there? Someone's hanging around the bathroom. They're not a safe person. People don't hang out in bathrooms. And secondly, if they start talking to you, leave. Don't say a word. Go. Right there and then. Even if you didn't wash your hands. Yep. Yep, that's not a safe person who's going to talk to you in a public bathroom. And also teach them, so something goes wrong. What are you going to do? Talk about it. What should you do? Be prepared. I always tell them, scream as loud as you can. You really have to make noise. And if it's a type of situation that requires it, you run. Don't hang around and don't think you can fight, especially boys will think that they can take down anybody. At least my son does. No, you get out of there. So you teach them what to do if something goes wrong and they get approached by somebody and they feel unsafe. And lastly, always tell an adult. Your kids need to hear that. It's unbelievable what they don't tell. So tell them, report this to your mom and dad. Okay, and also, as my husband said earlier, make sure your kids hear about these tricks that are on that handout as well, please. Okay, I will hand over the next section to my husband because he's great with teenagers.
I feel really sorry for you people having to sit here this long. But may I have you maybe 15 more minutes or so we can get this wrapped up. No, I don't need it. I love teenagers. They're like a bar of soap in the shower. If you squeeze them too much, they go this way. You don't squeeze them good enough, they go that way. And to find that right squeeze, right, with those teenagers, they're a challenge. I have raised 9 of them. Eight, I guess, one more. Just started. They're challenging. They're bursting. The world is opening up with all kinds of possibilities that they've been dreaming about. And I keep reminding my kids and teenagers, between the ages of 12, 13, and 23, you make most of the critical decisions of your life that will stay with you the rest of your life. Michelle said already, parents, we need to educate our children about sexuality. That's one of my most precious moments, I think. Just been going through that with David. He's 12. Now, in the last 2 years, been reading books with him. We curl up together in bed and read a book together. And you can gauge, you know, he's hooking off, no more. Okay, that's enough.
every time a little step further to unfold the beauty of the gift of God, which He created in the relationship of an intimate relationship between a husband and a wife. See, I learned all the sexual things on the street, from the jokes, from the talk, and now today they learn it from pornography. They learn it from the billboards. They learn it from the grocery outlets. It is so gross and so distorting. Why did my mom and dad never took me in their privacy and put this beautiful flower in front of me, which had a bud and no flower, and look, this is you, boy, and you've been young, and now you're going to grow, and look what's going to happen. And you take the next out, you put the flower on the table, and look, there's beautiful flowers, it's going to be you. You're growing, you're changing, your body is changing, you're going to be excited about this, you're going to be preparing to be a dad or a mother. So you're going to change in your body. And you know, this flower, is what is it meant to do? It's meant to be pretty. It's meant to be smelled at. It's meant to look at. But guess what, David? What happens if I start to poke in this bud? Let's take it apart. So I break the thing apart and pull out stuff. So what do you think is going to happen to this flower? It's going to be ugly. Okay. And now it's growing and we crack it. And now it hangs like this and the petals are gone. He says, you like to give a flower like this on your wedding day to your wife? Oh, no, she's not going to like that. He says, no, right. She wants a nice bouquet of flowers. No, David, this flower is you. God is going to grow your body to be a man. He's growing your girls in your classroom to be a woman. And one day, God is going to bring you, hopefully, together with a woman that's going to be your wife. Are you going to be a broken, pulled apart, dirtied flower? Or are you going to be a pretty one? And are you going to be able to look in the eyes of that woman and say to her, you're all for me. And you are the only one who's going to get me like this. You see, parents, this is what you need to do with your teenagers. And not teenagers, your teenagers, depending on how your child is. When David was 11, he began to say, you know what, people say I look like mom, and people say I look like you. Now, how in the world is that possible? I said, well, cool, let me tell you that. So I told him about the dogs that we made it for puppies. You've seen dogs do that. Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think about mom and dad also mating? Oh, gross. Okay, that was it. I said, well, that's all right, David. That is gross and you're fine, but that's really how God creates babies. I stopped at that point. 2 weeks later, he says, you know, Dad, can we talk about this again? You see, this little child's mind needed a little time to process this. And give him the time. But now comes the next chapter. And it's just so beautiful to introduce your boys and girls to the beauty of how God created the gift of sexuality. Right? And I wish I had that. I wish I had that. My first exposure to sexual things was a pornography magazine on the way to my HAVO in the Netherlands. I was 15 years old, and Jan and I saw it, and we looked at that thing, and friends, it was horrific to me. And this is why we need to be ahead of time even more today, because you don't have to find them today on the floor or along this bike path. It's everywhere. So, let's go look at this. Working side by side, wrong slide. Real quick. Boundaries again. Children need to know about boundaries. How do you communicate the boundaries to your friends? Do some role play. Yeah, I'm your friend. How are you going to respond to this? Yeah, this is very important again. Again, if your child feels like Michelle, it's not safe, what do we do about that situation when you don't feel safe? Talk. Yeah, these teenagers, they don't want to talk. Go take them out for coffee. Go out for a walk. Go on a bike ride. Side by side is much more comfortable than face to face. Yeah, they're embarrassed to talk about this thing. But they need you, dads. They need you, moms. to walk with you in this exciting journey to adulthood. It's a tough journey, difficult journey. Next, Michelle. Some children need more assertiveness. Yeah? Michelle said the compliant children are the most vulnerable. If a child grows up in a family where she is dominated and controlled, and she has learned that the only way to survive this is to be compliant and to say yes and to do it, but there's no assertiveness taught, he or she is vulnerable to being abused. Here she comes to a work situation and her boss is saying, oh, nice girl, 15, 16 year old. And he begins to groom her in the back of the room. Say, let's go to the back of the warehouse and let's go clean up the warehouse together. I talked to a girl like that. And her employer raped her repeatedly in the warehouse in the back. It says, what did you do about it? Oh, nothing. I felt powerless. Couldn't you say no? I don't know how to say no. I was never allowed to say no. Are your kids never allowed to say no? If you don't teach them how to say no in an appropriate way, you do not prepare them to say no to an abuser. We were working for a young lady whose teacher was abusing kids in the classroom, asked them to come forward, and he's fondling the girls under their skirt while he's explaining little math problems to her. And the one girl says, when he did, he stood up and says, no, you don't do that to me. Never touched her again. It's all she needed to do to protect herself against abuse. And all the other girls in the classroom were abused for a long time. The only thing she did, say, no, you don't do that. Why? That's my boundary. You can't touch me there. Yeah? That's assertive.
That's why we put these things in our pockets, I think.
Sorry about that. Okay, next. Yeah, go on next. So we already talked about that. Next one. Next slide, because I only have 5 minutes. Sex education, I already spoke about that. Yeah, but please, this one. Teach about pornography. This is the worst curse we are facing today. Have your boys know that when we look at pornography, it does the same thing as having heroin. You are hooked. Why is that? Because pornography releases a biological footprint in the brain. It releases the pleasure hormone, which God designed to be released when a man and a woman come together in the intimacy of the marriage life. Totally by design. That's how God made it. And that makes love, as we say in our beautiful English. That's how He designed it. Pornography brings that out of the context of the marriage, and it hooks, and it addicts, and it perverts, and it destroys. And this is where we get the casual sexual encounters from our teenagers. Pornography is a huge problem in our churches. Yeah, men, fathers, husbands struggling with pornography. Please, parents, I know you've had topics about it, but keep talking with your children about pornography. Open it up. Speak about the dangers. Read books together. Next one. The sexual sins acceptable to today's society. I mean, the words we read in Leviticus 18 about homosexuality, lesbians, the sexual perversions of today, we don't like to talk about. But please tell the children, what are God's boundaries? And why does God have these boundaries? What is His purpose behind it? Let's not just say no. Say, you know, God has a good purpose. He wants to protect you and me from destruction, from the pain, and all these things. This is His purpose. The law is like a beautiful fence around our life. And inside of it is happiness. Outside of it is unhappiness. Our children need to learn that. And that's what I mean about this speaking about it. Next one. Safety strategies. I think it's the same area that Michelle has covered very well together with each other. They become more independent, right? They get wheels under them. They have money, and the world is extending. And boy, what a dangerous world it is. So please look at that. Recognize the dangerous situations. My daughter likes to go walking out by herself, and I keep saying, girl, don't do this. So gladly, one day, she had the experience, she's walking down this narrow pathway behind our house, and there is this strange man sitting on a bench. And she gets scared, because she's way out all by herself, 15-year-old girl. And she's walking with two of our dogs. And the dogs are the most friendly creatures you've ever met. By the way, one of them is for sale. I mean, for free. But it's too far. And you know what? The strangest thing happened, she said. They both got really aggressive and growly. She'd never seen it before. I see God was protecting her. This man didn't move. As she walked past, the dog was just very aggressive. Never been like that, right? I said, girl, you were blessed by God's protection. But you did transgress the boundaries your mom and dad have been teaching you about. Don't go alone on these long walks. It's not a safe world. So please teach them that. Next one. Obviously, the devices. Yeah, we go to the next slide. The dating. Michelle and I do quite a bit of work with people where it all went wrong on dating already. My kids know that if my girls know that if there's a potential young man who wants to date them, that before they're going to ask her, they're going to have to ask me. I'm one of the old-fashioned ones, I think. Going to have to come on the front porch first and talk to me. And I specifically ask the young man, if he takes out my girl to date, he says, young man, I want to walk my daughter down the aisle one day, maybe to you, but sexually pure. I've worked hard to educate that. Are you going to promise me right in this spot that you're going to respect my boundary? No, God's boundary. Some of them might say, well, if you do that, your daughter will remain unmarried. Maybe. It's important, fathers, mothers. You need to protect your daughters against aggressive predators, young men, who maybe has been looking at pornography for a while already. And you let that predator boy take your girl out. Now, if your girl is not a weapon and not strong and not assertive and not resisting, guess what happens? They will be compromising their purity on their dating relationship. And yes, it's all secret, right? And they walk into the marriage and it's all secret. But what's going to happen? God says in 1 Thessalonians 4, he will be the avenger of premarital sex. How? It interferes in the intimacy of the bedroom. The scenes, the sins, the memories are all there. How many couples don't struggle with that? Tell our children that. This will leave a footprint in your life when you walk across God's boundaries in this important area. Next. Be accountable. Yes, my sons were dating, and they're normal young men. So I used to say, Josh, if you would give yourself a grade this week for the purity, what would it be? Well, not good there. I says, okay, boy, let's go talk again about boundaries. You have about a year or two to go yet, maybe, before you get married with this young lady. How are you going to handle this? Why are you so foolish to go together on a place by yourself as you are both fully in love? You can handle that. Your dad can handle that. Really? No. You can handle that. So be wise, young man. So let's make an accountability with each other. I want to help you as a father walk through this difficult stage of remaining pure until your marriage day. And you're going to enjoy the marriage day so much more. See, that's accountability. Talk about this subject. Next. 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 Wow. Next. I talked about all of that already, so. Friends, the last thing. is Gates, Minimize Risk, Supervise Access. I won't say more about that. It's clear that you need to be very much in touch with your protection of your children. May I just point out one thing? Babysitters. Mom and dad go babysitter. Have you screened your babysitter? Are you sure your babysitter is safe? How many babysitters? Older siblings. We've talked about strangers. Perhaps we need to reiterate it again. Most of our abuse counseling are older brothers and sisters who are babysitting their kids. They go fishing out in the back of the farm. Yeah, Mom, we'll take her along too. Oh, Mom thinks, great. Boys are really having a nice time fishing. They don't know fishing. I saw it the other day myself. Here's two young girls going with four teenage boys swimming. I called the parent. I said, you know what you're doing? These are four teenage boys that are just sexually awakening and bursting. You're letting your girls go with those boys swimming? Is there anybody adult to supervise? No, they won't do anything. He says, oh dear woman, you are so naive. Now, this is what you need to watch. Yeah, who are your children's enemies? Let's review it last thing. First, obviously, Satan. He lives in our children's hearts by nature as they are sinful, unsaved. That is the reality unless they are obviously born again by the grace of God and they still have a heart that is sinful. David. Yeah? Children of God are not exempt. So Satan will work with us. The surrounding culture. It is totally sick. So open and so vile. The next is, notice that? Uneducated parents, thank you for coming tonight. Yeah, you're doing a great favor to your children by at least being here, by learning more. Thirdly, fourthly, uninvolved parents. Letting your children go, just don't get involved, don't be involved. Parenting is a 24-hour job. It is the most important calling. Fathers, I might have said it to you before. I ask a man, what do you do for a living? And they say, oh, I'm a farmer, and I'm a plumber, and I'm an office man. I says, you're all wrong. That's your secondary job. Really? Yeah. Your primary job is to be dad. Do you think that way, fathers? Be involved. If your work is too busy, oh, I'm going to hear that tonight. If you are too busy and you don't have enough time for your kids, we're wrong. We're wrong. That's not biblical. We're sacrificing our children often on the idol of our work. Work, prestige, money. And what will happen to our children? Please, please. Next. The pedophile molester, look at how down the line he is. And I actually think we should change this order. Let's go next. Family members or friends really sit above the pedophile and the molester. And the last one is the older siblings. And please put the pedophile on the bottom. Michelle's a stranger danger, right? You don't sell your children. Look, kids, when you cross the road, only look out for the cars that are red. The rest of them are safe. You don't say that, right? All cars are dangerous when you cross the road. So please, all people have potential dangers. Thank you so much, parents, friends, office bearers, teachers, for coming here tonight. And there's a couple of closing words, one for you and one for me.
The last thing I want to say is that I know that coming here has been very hard for some of you in the audience here. That no doubt this topic on such a sensitive nature has opened up pain for you and or been triggering feelings of anxiety or whatever from your own experiences. And I just want to say thank you again for the courage to come here, make it different for your children and those other children around you that you have influence for, but also for yourself. Let tonight be a beginning for you. If you have not addressed the hidden pain from abuse in your life, we were not able, of course, with all the information here, to speak about healing tonight, but I do want to say that there is healing from sexual abuse, and the Lord is the healer. So begin tonight by going to Him with your pain, and also read Psalm 147. The Lord healeth those that are broken in heart, and He bindeth up their wounds. So go to Him. But also find biblical counseling. Find a support. Tell somebody. If you've never told anyone before, then do that. Find somebody who you can trust to open up to about this. It won't go away without being faced. So that was outside of the scope of this topic, but I know for many of you this has been difficult. So please do that for yourself tonight.
In all counseling work I do, I always remind the counselee, before it gets better, it gets worse. That's also with this. Facing sexual abuse in your own life, think of it this way. Some people are running west to chase the setting sun. That's not what you need to do. You need to face east. Face the darkness. Find the sun. Now that's just a picture. So walking away from the pain of abuse and the reality of it is never going to make it go away. Keep always chasing for what is elusive. So Michelle mentioned the abused. There are here tonight perhaps also people listening who are abusers. Mr. Griesing's prayed for that this evening, that there may be arrows of conviction by the Spirit of God brought in your heart. Don't be like Joseph's brothers. For over 20 years they hid, and they lived with the terror of what they've done to their brother. And lastly, all of us feel the pain that others have gone through. And that is, I think, the great motivation for my wife and I to be here tonight to speak about that. This is one of the most painful parts of ministry, to deal with abuse victims. And thank you too also, Michelle, for your courage tonight to be here with me and to help with that. Friends, it's been much later. I'm sorry. You may all sleep in tomorrow. We'll sing together, but maybe we should just omit that because it's so late. Well, let's do one verse at least of the Psalter that we have, and then I will lead in a closing prayer. I know there is questions, and you know what? I have no time for that, but I promise you we'll answer all of them. But then it will be privately, through the phone. If there are questions on Michelle's phone, then we're going to deal with those privately to you, because the time really is up. And if you have, unless afterwards you feel free to come to us, we're here.
Actually, allow people to go, and if you want to stay later for question and answer,
yep. So let's sing. Sorry. Psalter 19. It was a prayer of a obviously very struggling person. And if you read through it to the eye of one who's been abused as well, you know, that's actually can be very much their cry. So let's do verse 2. Of Psalter 19 and verse 5. 2 and 5. try to pray together. Almighty and eternal God, Thou art witness of the cries that also in this psalm are worded, the suffering poor, those who are oppressed, those who have been abused, and those, Lord, who are wounded through this in so many ways. Our hands are unable to minister, to heal, sometimes even not able to deliver. O Almighty, we plead with Thee, break Thou this power of the kingdom of darkness. Break Thou the patterns of abuse. Empower Thou us as fathers and as mothers of our young children to be guardsmen, to build, as it were, that castle, Lord, with Thy blessing, and to also do all we can to protect this beautiful flower with which Thou hast created us and which is so vilely, grossly, violently abused. O Almighty Lord, we confess we have brought this darkness, this destruction upon ourselves. It is our sins that has destroyed everything of Thy beautiful creation and paradise. And therefore we plead that Thou would come with Thy merciful and healing grace, especially those in the lives of those who are wounded in heart, but also in those who are abusers, whose hands and bodies are soiled with abuse. O God, may they also find place of repentance as well as cleansing. And so carry us all in Thy hands, protect us on the way home, pardon all that was amiss tonight, as there undoubtedly was much, but bless Thou what was according to Thy word and principles. We ask all this in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, a parting word at this one late, and tomorrow will be just as much. So, I still don't want you to discourage you to come again. Because the subject tomorrow is just a different dimension, which is really an very important one as well. So if you can't make it tomorrow, you can always listen. But please, thank you for coming. Stick around or go home. But if you want to stay around for some questions, we can do that. But otherwise, feel free to go.
Manager or someone. I have never had any experience with anyone that has come to me that has showed, talked about accusations of not necessarily rape but sexual assault or so on, that are framing the person in order to get him or her in trouble. I've not had that. Right? So that's not common, at least in my experience. That there are people in the world going to do this, undoubtedly. Yeah, even if you look a little bit with one look, they say, oh, look, he's assaulting me. Well, maybe, I'm not saying it's an exaggerated environment, not at all. I'm always saying what happened to Mr. Harvey, what is his name again? Weinstein. I mean, this is the first time this ever happened, that a man of that stature ended up in prison, right? But you notice how the media still speaks about that. So anyway, I have no experience with that. Correct? Perhaps this was addressed to many vices for difficult adult victims of childhood abuse to come forward and accuse the perpetrators. Is it even more difficult for males than females? Let me show answer that.
Probably one aspect is shame, and it's opening up it opens up a can of worms. You know, an accusation against a person is going to cause consequences for that person, possibly for other family members or members of the community. And I think that women or men do not do this lightly. Do you have anything else to add about reasons why they wouldn't tell? That's going to be the consequences, and that could be shame.
Fear.
Yep. Why is it more difficult for males? Undoubtedly, it is.
Shame.
Yeah, there are very few men who yet speak about this compared to women who come forward to share stories of the past. And yet, I believe that there are a high incidence of boys being sexually assaulted or abused in their childhood that never tell about this.
You can see it coming out, of course, in the Roman Catholic tradition quite a bit. Boys have been abused. But how long ago this was? For a boy to be sexually assaulted is incredibly humiliating. And our manhood is degraded. For a woman to be sexually assaulted is also humiliating, but differently than for the male status. And that's why I think boys very, very seldom volunteer with this information. But just be aware of it. It's also 1 out of 6 or more, because it's unreported. Would you notice that a child's character changed if they were abused? Yes and no. I think generally yes. And you look at that outline, what are some of the signs? Regression, bedwetting, they go back to early stages in life. Sometimes school performance drops like a stone. Unexplainable aggression, all kinds of things can change in a child. It goes unreported. There's quite a powerful book called Erin's Story, Erin, E-R-I-N, and she has, this girl went through an horrendous type of abuse, never told a parent for years, and her school dropped, she was diagnosed with all kinds of mental disorders, right? Intellectual disabilities, and she went through the whole gamut of tests. No one ever suspected this girl was being abused. So, definitely, you will see changes in your child, reaction or character when they're being abused. More? Or any reaction, please. If you have any, raise your hand and say it.
That's not entirely true, actually.
Not entirely true.
No.
Okay.
There's many kids that are abused that you'd never guess are abused.
Okay.
Based on how they were raised, based on their personality, based on how they were abused, who they were abused by.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
I agree with that. I think most of them make
change. Age.
Pardon?
Age makes another
difference.
Yeah,
well, that's true. But that's how this house is, this girl changed, but I know another girl who flew right to school on a high level, never changed. It's very great, but very, very badly abused. So.
The communication in the family probably is a big deal. Because when I think about this a lot, I think about our own family, and we're in tune to our kids. And yes, we can notice it on them, but we've always encouraged openness about feelings, and so I think it's more noticeable than when they come home grumpy or say, okay, something happened. But indeed, if the communication in the family is stifled, kids can't show or tell their feelings, then it's very possible you'll never see anything.
So thanks. Do like her if you have any wisdom to share. I find it quite disturbing that you actually can't trust anyone. You know, this is disturbing. But this is what total depravity is in practice. We teach this doctrinally, but we don't believe it practically. So in teaching, yes, as you teach about sexual abuse, Papa could do that. And he cannot do that to you either. He's not allowed to do that. Papa? Would Papa do things like that? Yes, Papa has the potential to be a bad sin. And it is hard for us to acknowledge it, Friends, let me put it plainly. We are very sexual beings. When a child is formed as a boy in the womb, he has already 10% more testosterone hormone. He's fired up the moment he gets out of the womb. Now they become a teenager. They can't be trusted. Especially because we have years now in our culture where a 12-year-old is fully capable and he has to wait till 2023 and all the sexual stimulation plus the curiosity, especially when we have not been training them. My youngest boy did not grow up with baby sisters. He was 11. He said, "Dad, do girls' bottles really look different than us?" I was glad it wasn't an innocent boy like that. But he says, "Yeah, David, they do." So if I wouldn't have said, "Well, let's go find a picture, a very normal sketch on the computer, what a girl looks like." If I didn't do that, what would have happened? He would find out himself. His school finds out, find a little girl, maybe look at his little cousin, or niece, right? That's how it goes. Again, the child is curious. So please, what's the question? I forgot my question. Oh yeah, can't trust. It is hard to accept it, but as uncle, you cannot be too vigilant. But does it mean you have to look at everybody and say you can't trust them? That's the wrong approach. You have to look at the child and say, how can I prepare him or her to protect himself or herself against me? Yeah, you can't start saying because you can't trust grandpa and uncle and aunt. That's wrong. Yep, but take to reality, teach the child. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately, can I just add to that? I think that unfortunately that isn't always going to prevent them from looking it up themselves anyway.
No. You want to add this to you, or can you speak a little louder?
I just said, unfortunately, I feel that even if you show your child, they will still go and look for it themselves. Because that's what lives in us, right?
That's right. Curiosity.
Yep.
That is. And so, I'm not saying that prevented him to go look for it.
No, right.
Right? But because there was just, he's the youngest, he doesn't see baby sisters getting changed for. Because we're living away from our grandchildren, he's never seen a baby change diapers either. So that was just a different reality. I wasn't aware of that. He grew up without that basic anatomy knowledge. Yeah.
Next question. As grandparents, we are advising our children to say no to sleepovers for birthday parties, etc., for their children. In this day and age, we feel it is too dangerous. So our comment on that is we would support that thought very much. Sleepovers is something I've always, got an invitation to a sleepover. I don't like sleepovers. So if we can get out of it again, it's something you need to evaluate. Whose house are they going to? Have you prepared them for what to do if something goes wrong, what they should do? I have let the kids go to sleepovers when they're older. I don't know exactly what age, but probably 10 and up we have allowed it, but not younger than that. And also, again, I have told the kids, if you aren't comfortable there, you tell that mom, call me. No explanation needed. Just say, call my mom, and I'll come and pick you up. Doesn't matter what time of day or night, I'll come pick you up. But, I do agree with the sentiment in this day and age, sleepovers are not a good idea. And I think we would all do each other a favor and not have the kids stay over. Why do they have to stay over? Why can't they go home at the end of the day? They have their fun, just let them go home and sleep. I agree in the safer.
Any reason? Yeah. My name is George now, I don't know.
Jeff. I'd just like to speak to everybody in general then, also to accountability, and then these things. Well, we're acknowledging all these things together here as the broader Reform community. And that we hold each other accountable also, not just with our children and our spouses, but will you speak to your sons and your daughters? Can you expect that I speak to mine? We're going to find each other here and there, and we all know what our children are like. Chris said, hey, you think that stops them? If we understand that so clearly, then we need to support each other in parenting as well, in sleepovers, in understanding the risks, and not being ashamed of it, and that's why we're here. So I'm insanely thankful to see everyone in here, and we share these things together, and I think it supports each other. So
it's hard, of course, if you draw different lines as parents. The one can do it, the other can. Now, the next question I don't really have an answer on. We're often told to have a filter on the internet, but not sure which is a good filter. Have any suggestions? You'll have to find another expert on that. You have committees. There's one.
Can I suggest that you check out the website of the Modern Media Committee from Lethbridge or from Grand Rapids? But Lethbridge has a very, very good site. They evaluate pros, cons, advice for how to set it up. There's workshops at school if you need help setting it up. There's resources available for filters.
Great. Thank you.
Can you share even one or two practical tips for screening babysitters?
Good. Well, we have a couple.
I think I had something on the paper.
Okay, I was going to say, we're not experts on that one because our kids have done a lot of babysitting for us. We have a lot of daughters, and that has been a real blessing, even at this moment. Our 20-year-old daughter is in charge with a 17 and 12-year-old at home. So, practical tips for screening babysitters. Well, if you're talking about a situation like both parents are gone to work and you need to find a babysitter for a child that's not known to you, obviously there are processes you can go through to do background checks and so on. I'm not sure that that's where you were getting at. I think you're talking about for an evening like this, how can you find a good babysitter? I'm sure you have got lots of young ladies in this reformed community who have been great babysitters. So, again, preparation of your kids beforehand, speaking to them afterwards, how did the evening go, what did you do, what you talk about, you know, just gauging your kids. Probably is what I would do the most. You're not going to be able to do a background check on a reformed teenager. So I don't have a very good answer to that.
No, except you could, I've never done it, but I know the YMCA has courses for babysitting. Safety measures, safety protocols. And it's really interesting. I've looked at one of those courses once. I guess it was too late for my kids, because they're grown up. They teach kids safety about babysitting. You could ask your babysitter, I want you to have a course like that. I'll pay for it. If you want to be my regular babysitter. I think also we need to talk to babysitters as we do to our young men who begin to date our girl. It says, look, I'm giving you the trust of my children for this evening, and these are the limits or the guidelines I expect you to keep. Yeah, we're not in the bedrooms together. And I do check with the kids afterwards. Yeah, something like that would be enough to let the babysitter know. I said, hey, these parents are on. They're on to this. Yeah. Be open to discussion.
I thought one more thing, too, that could possibly help is if you get two kids over to babysit. That might be something else as well.
Yeah, and the next question is very painful, and that's exactly the reality that we are dealing with in the situation now. If a brother is threatening to cut off ties with the family, if I come out with what happened in the past, what steps do you take and how do you reply? You notice the threat in this brother, right? Threat. You come out, I'll cut off. Don't listen to this threat. He has to face his wrong. He cannot force you to do another wrong, which is to cover sin. So please do not be afraid of such a threat. If he leaves, that's his problem. You are setting a boundary about yourself and you protect yourself. And if this brother, or well, this is the brother, right, is threatening to cut off the ties with the family, he he is abusing. And he needs to be stopped in that. And so what steps do you take? He says, well, you need to inform him, first of all, that you are going to break the news with the family. Number one. Hard, right? Because this is going to disturb the whole family. But why is it necessary? Others need to be protected from this young man. If this young man is not exposed, his brother, and the people don't know, and they're dropping off little kids to him, right? We had a case where a father abused his daughters. Didn't come out in the open, but it came out on a private level. So I counseled the two daughters, you need to inform all your siblings about it. Yeah, but they don't know about it. I said, doesn't matter. They need to know about it. You don't have to tell that they have to spread it out. Why do you need to know? Because you need to protect your children, grandchildren, from this father. Abuse flourishes in silence. And that needs to be broken. And yet, that's sometimes the price. It's painful. Isn't that exactly what the Lord calls us to do if someone loves his brother, father, mother more than me? This is about truth. This is about protection. This is also about the confrontation and the salvation of the abuser. Because he is now coming to terms with his own sin. We keep covering him. Keep covering him. So please, it's painful. And yeah, there comes sometimes irreparable damage to family, dealing with his own family, where the one brother abused his siblings several times, several siblings, and yeah, he's not including the birthday card. It's sad. This is his doing, and he has accepted that. This is the relationship with heaven. Okay. Well, I find it always a hard one, but maybe Michelle can help me. I have a question about the psychological and the sexual interactions. What do you mean with surrogate husband and wife? Let's assume we have a couple who are not very functional together. Mom and dad don't have a good marriage. So now what does happen? Father begins to confide in his daughter. Things he really does not confide in his daughter, let alone his wife. He begins to share his emotions, his frustration, his pain in the daughter. Now what's that daughter become? It becomes a surrogate wife. Now there may be no sexual actions taking place, but he's definitely transgressing the proper role boundary. And this can be psychologically very damaging and confusing. Also, if mom and sons become extremely close, and she begins to confide. You know, it can eventually, I'm not saying it always does, it can eventually even promote homosexuality and lesbianism. Because they are so twisted through those interactions with their parent, which don't belong to kids' parents, and only belong to spouse parents. That's what I mean with a psychological surrogate. But maybe you have more to say on that.
I was going to say, I was asked after the talk by someone in person, and they made a good comment that we refer to abusers mostly in the male pronoun, he and him. And that was a little bit, I think, because we were both racing to get through things, we weren't very mindful, because in fact there are women abusers, and we should have brought that out clearer. And so my comment to this person was, actually psychological sexual abuse, I think, is more commonly done by mothers to their sons. Well, I can't say more commonly. I think that is a way that mothers sexually abuse their sons when they look to their sons for the support that they should be getting from their husbands. And often they do sexualize that as well. Just, can you give me a back rub? Or, you know, I'm so tired. And they share their problems, and they're really drawing their son in emotionally and sexually. There becomes a real confusion. If this is a teenage son and he's got to give his mom a back rub, or, you know, worse, it does so much damage to be having that emotional and sexual awakening. He's going to be affected by this. And he hates it and he loves it. It's
powerfully damaging. So, yes, women are abusers, and the psychological one is one of a big way I think mothers can do that in a warped relationship with their son, over-controlling or overly needy relationship. And secondly, while I'm talking about this female abusers, I have run into two cases in the last month alone, where one was about a 10-year-old girl who abused an infant or toddler boy physically, and another one was a case I heard about, which was an aunt who sexually abused an infant girl. So these things do happen.
What a dark reality, isn't it?
And our circle.
You must feel a little bit tonight how often Michelle and I, we just cry when you hear, oh, another case. I'm sure out of this conversation or this topic tonight, we will have a whole host of emails. I mentioned in my church 5 years ago sexual abuse, and there were four older women that came forward to me. She says, yes, my uncle, elder in the church, and this and that church abused me. That one, I never talked about them. Four old ladies. Yeah, it's everywhere. It's so painful. So, as we talk about it tonight, you'll feel the hurt. Now, the next question, you talked about having sex before marriage, premarital sex, how that leaves a footprint on marriage. Can you explain, and what's the biblical reasoning behind it? If you are looking or listening to 1 Thessalonians 4, let me just read it. This is the will of God, even your sanctification, that you abstain from fornication. And fornication is the word porneo in Greek. It's also where our pornography comes from. So it's sexual sin or sexual acts outside of a marriage relationship. Then God says that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the lust of concupiscence, that's sexual stimulated lust, even as the Gentiles. That no man go beyond and defraud his brother in any matter. It's a really critical passage. I'm not talking about money here, because the context is sexual sin. He says that if I have a sexual relationship with someone who doesn't end up to be my wife or husband, I defrauded the future husband or the future wife or son. I took something away from him. Have belonged to him, not to me. And then comes the next verse. God says, because the Lord is the avenger of all sons, as I have forewarned. So God says, I will avenge this. Now how does God avenge that? Often, these marital couples struggle with memory overload. And when do these memories come back the most? When we are in our intimate moments with each other. That's how God avenges. And if this doesn't come out and isn't dealt with biblically in confession and seeking the Lord also for the forgiveness, then it will, be hampering the marriage relationship. And that is a common problem. So that's 1 Thessalonians 4 is what I was referring to. Of course, there's not here then, but the biblical pathway. Confession, seeking forgiveness, and bringing out the sword. That is the way that we must deal with these things. The names of the books, friends, there is a handout that you can download and print as a PDF file from our website. It's about 25 pages, and your church wasn't that generous.
It would have been, but we told them not to. It's about 20 pages. So there's a book titles and a short description and where you can find it for sale.
This is the last question. Can you lay? Okay, I'll translate it because it does. Don't you have to cover with the cover of love, so as they say in our church connections? Cover with love, of course, is the passage from 2 Peter, and above all things, have charity among yourselves, for charity shall cover a multitude of sins. What kind of sins is Peter talking about? Now, God covers the sins of infirmity is people all day long. I mean, as we sit, we do sins of infirmity, as we walk, as we think, as we pray. He is not calling attention to every sin. But when I do a conscious sin, and I am transgressing my conscience, or the Spirit's testimony, or the Word of God, those sins he doesn't cover with love. He rebukes, he brings out the altar, he convicts through the Spirit that there comes repentance. And we're talking here not about sins of infirmity. We're talking here about gross, abusive, horrible, belittling, breaking of spirits, young women and young boys. That's not covered with love. That needs to experience tough love, which means confrontation, to bring it out. If there may repentance come, yes, obviously, and there needs to be also the exercise of love. And how difficult that is, only those know who have been abused. That's also not just a, well, I forgive you. That's a journey, quite a difficult journey, for a person who's been abused to come to genuine forgiveness. And as church leaders also need to be really careful with that, not to hasten that process. Well, he's made confession, done confession of guilt, and it's done and over with. That's not how it works. That's true, and if it is true between God and him, but it's not true between the victim and him. And that, as church leaders, is really, really tricky. What protection do we give to these victims that can hardly sit in the same sanctuary as the abuser? That's the reality. There are people who don't dare to come to church because they might see the abuser running off. Yeah, well, the abuser gets more rights because, yeah, he is, of course, still sitting there and so on, and whereas the victim just can't stand seeing. So it's a hard, very tricky. I don't have a real good answer on that. There's a question in the back.
So where does the legal framework of our country stand in that regard then? So in the event that someone would report the abuse to you,
yeah,
are you not required to report that to someone who's
jurisdiction by law? I don't agree with the law in my country. I don't know how it's in Canada. In my country, clergyman does not need to report. I'm not a mandatory reporter, but I tell my people I am a reporter. I don't have to, but I do. If I hear about an abuse case, I report.
Of a child.
Of a child.
Yes.
Yeah. Sorry, not of a child.
So a child who, a current child who is being abused, always needs to be reported and dealt with. That child's safety is paramount.
I am not legal.
And secondly, adults who seek out sexual relations with children, they need to be dealt with. We cannot give them second chances. So if it's an adult abusing a child, there's absolutely no room for not reporting. They need to be reported immediately.
Yeah, I don't know about teachers. I'm sure they have reports. And I don't know about Canadian laws if office bearers and churches are mandatory reporters here.
But I suppose this question may then, what if it was something from the past and this person, the victim, is an adult? Is that what you meant?
Well, the victim is an adult and the event has taken place in the past. Now, there's such a variety of limitations in terms of reporting, right? That's the sad part. I don't know how to look at that. But there comes a time that it has gone beyond the expiring date. And then, civilly, not in Canada.
But you don't have to report if it is an adult that is reporting to you the sexual abuse of the past. They are adults.
Let me just give
this fine, because this is important legal stuff that I'm not so good at.
Whatever. I think in Canada, there's no statute of limitations.
Wonderful.
Okay, and even for mandatory reporters, if it is an adult that is talking to you,
yeah,
and about an abuse that happened many years ago, they are an adult. They can report themselves.
Yeah.
You don't have to report for them. If it's a child, then it is mandatory. They can report. Right?
That's what you meant.
Thank you.
Again, circumstance can play a part in deciding whether to go to through the justice system or not. I believe there's quite a difference between a boy abusing, molesting a younger sibling, and, you know, we're also talking about pedophiles and molesters, adults seeking sex from children and stuff. There's a big difference.
when this boy has grown up, what kind of consequences are there going to be? I think the situation needs to be evaluated on an individual basis.
Now I'll say, well, there's, I'm not sure how you're going to sleep tonight, but yeah.
Lethbridge has a sexual assault society, so if you do have questions about reporting or what is required in the reporting process, they would probably be the ones to get a hold of.
Okay.
The amicus is also pretty important.
Okay. YMCA is mentioned here. I'm really also encouraged to hear that there is a group formed by the different churches here to deal with this. That's a tremendous step forward. Really thankful that as sisters you are supporting that help anyway. But now we go on to let it go. There's one more now. I can't say no, but it is the last one.
If it's a senior or someone that you're taking care of, whether it's a carnal person, there's also the Protections and Care Act that will do an investigation, which is for the people that nurses can care of. Like, they're very thorough with their investigations.
Thank you so much. Thank you for staying extra too.
Yeah. Sorry, not so late. We had so much to share.